Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. I'm your host, Willem van Horst. Thank you for tuning in. If you're already familiar with the show, welcome back. If it's the first time you're listening, this is a show where I interview all kinds of different creators and to find out more about their inspiration. It tends to revolve in areas, obviously, that I'm interested in learning about. So that is typically around marketing and advertising, media, and game design, and people who are in the gaming industry and gaming community at large as well. So in this particular episode is more of this case. I have an exciting guest today, Tanya DePass. And Tanya is the founder of a community that is working called, it's called I Need Diverse Games. And it's a community that is dedicated to promoting diversity in the gaming area, in the art of gaming. So they're dedicated to helping everybody who wants to bring more diversity in the art of gaming. So they sponsor attendance to diverse gaming conventions. She co-hosts another audio podcast called Fresh Out of Tokens. She is a diversity consultant for GamerX, which is a convention specifically oriented around the LGBT gaming community. They have multiple different ways in which you can participate. This all started out with a hashtag on Twitter, so the hashtag is alive and well on Twitter, I Need Diverse Games, hashtag I Need Diverse Games. There's a Patreon if you'd like to participate to that. The links are going to be in the show notes, or you can just look up I Need Diverse Games. There's a Tumblr, there's a Twitter account. She's involved at multiple conferences. She's going to be at the Game Developers Conference, GDC, starting very shortly. I'm very jealous, I'd love to be at, but... That'll be for some other time. There's loads of events I'd love to be at. I would also love to be at South by Southwest, but that's not happening. I am in London, getting over my cold slowly, slowly. So, you know, there's that. What else is going on? So if you follow the show, or if it's the first time you're listening, you can find, I don't know where you're listening to this. You might be listening on my website. You might be listening on any number of places where the RSS feed for the audio file is available. I know that tends to be revolving around iTunes and Stitcher. I use Stitcher, but a lot of people use iTunes. If ever you're using either one of these platforms, it would be awesome if you could subscribe to the show. If you enjoy what you're hearing, then please take a minute and just, you know, post a rating or review. I keep banging on about it because it makes a hell of a difference for other people to be able to find the show. The show spreads further, and that's the main thing I want. I just want for more people to listen to this. It just makes sense. And if you enjoy it, it's just also is immensely encouraging when I hear people enjoying it. Just like leaving a comment saying, hey, I enjoy it. Or even just like, you know, you can send me a tweet. My Twitter handle is at HippoWill, HippoWill. That is, people ask a lot, but it's just really quite simply because I thought it was a funny name. My name is Will, Willem, and I like hippos. It's kind of my totem animal, I think. There's no other reason that I just kind of like the animal. I think it's a cool animal. And I saw a bunch of them when I was in Africa, in Tanzania, in the Selous Game Reserve. But that's a whole other ballgame story. Well, what else? That's about it for the introduction, really. I could keep going on and on. But really, let's get to the main part of the show, and I will let Tanya speak. Doing well. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate you making the time.
Oh, no problem.
It sounds like you're a busy woman these days. Lots going on.
A bit, yeah. GDC is coming very soon. A lot sooner than I realized. It feels like it snuck up on me.
Yeah. So to start with a conversation, and I don't know if you had a chance to listen to any of the other podcast episodes, but I usually start with a warm-up question. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like, if there's any kind of bit of information, I look up on the person that jumps at me. And this one was kind of curious. So, you know, I was looking up at the stuff that you've been writing and your website and looked up your LinkedIn profile. And I saw that you listed under your professional experience that you're a citizen of the U.S. And it's the first time I see anybody do that.
It's a weird thing LinkedIn gives you the option to do. So I did it and I didn't realize it would stay there like a job.
Yes, exactly. Oh, so it is in the profile filling options? I didn't even remember that.
Yeah, it's like you could put in citizen. So maybe if you became a naturalized citizen somewhere else, there was an option to say so.
Fair enough.
It's a little weird.
Yeah, okay. So I was wondering if there was any particular motivation behind that, but it's just that it offered you the option.
Yeah, and that LinkedIn profile is one I'm slowly trying to probably kill off because it's related more to what I did in higher ed.
Yeah.
Versus what I'm doing now in gaming.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll have the opportunity to talk about all of it during the whole flow of the conversation. But I usually just like to start at the beginning. So you're based in Chicago. Is that where you grew up as well?
Yep. Born and raised in Chicago.
And your interest in games, how did that start out? Because I remember I read in another interview you gave in a written format on a website that you started out with arcade gaming at the time.
Yeah, arcade and also tabletop. Like I played D&D first edition, but I had a very strict religious mother. And so she also fell in a kind of, you know, tabletop and D&D is the devil. And so it was mostly arcade gaming for me.
Oh, really? Because that was an interesting time in the 80s. There was the whole movement against kind of Dungeons and Dragons from religious groups. How did you find out about D&D in the first place?
Like grade school friends who, you know, like we were a bunch of nerds, even though a lot of people don't like the word or the term anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, people are into comics and into games and things like that. And so we just kind of found it. But again, I have a strict mother.
Yeah.
And, I got a chance to play it. I got to play it more in my teens. So I spent more of my time in arcades growing up. So, you know, like Contra, Street Fighter, Excitebike, all the, you know, games we grew up with, Cruisin' USA.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as the market expanded into the home, I kind of followed along.
Yeah. What was your first home gaming console or computer?
I always want to say it's an SNES. That is the one I have the most clear memory of having.
Uh-huh.
I had a Sega Genesis for a while. You know, I got to play ColecoVision, but over at friends' places, we never had one in the house. Yeah, it was SNES.
Cool. And what are your favorite games?
Terms of genre or title?
Well, a bit of both. Whatever comes to mind first is cool.
In terms of genre, I'm a big RPG fan. You know, play a lot of Dragon Age, a lot of Mass Effect, Skyrim. And then in terms of genre, I like titles. I really like Street Fighter. I like, you know, grew up in Mortal Kombat. Saw it go, like, start in the arcade and move on to home. Skyrim, Civilization, XCOM, played a lot of hours of the old XCOM game, and the new XCOM games. I'm terrible at them, but I played them.
I still haven't played that. To be honest, I used to play a lot of video games when I was younger, particularly with the Super Nintendo, you know, starting with games like Secret of Mana that I spent like a lot of nights on with a couple of other friends. But I like the idea of video games, but I don't really, like, I follow a few trailers, but I don't play on a regular basis. But I do still play tabletop games and tabletop role-playing games are one of my main interests. And I also participate in a podcast in French with a few friends to discuss kind of role-playing game theory, and which is pretty cool. And I enjoy talking to game designers from that particular environment as well.
Cool.
Yeah, which is part of that's how I started this podcast as well, was kind of selfishly looking at, all right, well, who can I talk to that seems really interesting and is bringing different perspectives either to my more professional side, which is in marketing and advertising, or to the gaming environment. You need more diverse games. And I was thinking, well, I need to have talked to more diverse people for my podcast, which I thought was an interesting. That's why I kind of like got in touch with you. I first found out about Offworld, and then I was emailing a few people from there, came across your article and your website. So that one thing led to the other. And I've been, that's how we came to talk today. I'm rambling a little bit, but
it's okay.
So you studied at a Catholic university, as far as I understand. DePaul is a Catholic or religious of some kind?
Yes. Well, it was founded by St. Vincent de Paul.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting, you know, for a Catholic university, quote unquote, air quotes, because people can't see me. It's very secular. It's not like you have to go to mass or anything like that, but you know, the mission that it's driven by is very much a Catholic Vincentian mission.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And did you start, because I saw that you studied both Japanese and human-computer interaction and communications, I don't know if it was all of them or in order. Did you start with Japanese or
So I was one of those people that bounced around a bit. Yeah. I didn't go to college until I was in my 20s. Okay. I was not the, you know, the traditional student in any way, shape, or form. Starting communications, because I always wanted to be a professional writer. I always wanted to be a novelist. Hmm. And, you know, writing has always been my strongest suit. And did communications. I enjoyed it. But the way the track was going wasn't really suited to what I thought I wanted to do as an adult. And then I switched over to Japanese studies and really enjoyed it. I loved it. I even double majored for a while. But then, you know, money required a full-time job.
Yes.
And, you know, unfortunately, I couldn't continue on with the Japanese because the way the program was structured was all during the day. And so I either wound up working like 10, 12-hour days to go to school, or I switched over to computer science / human computer interaction.
Right.
And that's where I wound up finishing my studies in that field.
Cool. And the Japanese, did it come from, where did the interest in Japan come from?
So shamefully, I'm a big nerd and love animation.
Yes.
Of
course, that's the answer I was hoping for.
So, you know, Transformers, all the things were getting imported from Japan piqued my interest.
Yeah.
And, you know, some things I actually wanted to see more in Japanese with English subtitles. But, you know, back then, dubbing and subbing wasn't a big thing.
Yeah.
So it was an interest in it. And actually, I didn't realize we had Japanese until like 6 months before I studied abroad. Mm. Well, I should say I was taking Japanese. I didn't know we had a program to study abroad. But it worked out and I was able to go. And I actually stayed for a year at Kansai Gaidai.
Sorry, where is that? I don't know where that is.
Kansai Gaidai is a school in Osaka, Japan.
Okay, cool. Great. Well, that must have been a really amazing experience. How was that?
It was amazing. I actually had reverse culture shock when I came home.
Yeah.
I got very used to, you know, the weather. And for me, I'm not really good at history. That is one of my poorer subjects. But to be able to walk around and see, you know, like a modern office building and then tucked between that and the subway station is like this tiny little temple that's been there for hundreds of years that's left out of respect. And, you know, to see things like Mount Fuji and Fushimi Naritaisha and just see all of this history, it was just such an amazing thing because being there, I got a context I never got in a history book in the U.S.
Yeah.
Like I got a chance to go to Hiroshima and that was such an emotionally moving experience. Mm. I would never have got that, you know, just from what we study and what we're told in the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can't replace the direct experience of what's going on over there. I was lucky enough to go visit, Tokyo and Mount Fuji for a few days when I lived in Asia, but I didn't have a chance to visit Osaka or Kyoto or anything else or anywhere else or Hiroshima. So maybe some other time. Did you have an experience of a gaming environment like, you know, your youth going to arcade gaming environments in the U.S. versus gaming in Japan?
It was different. I did go to arcades there and it seemed very, I want to say intense. It seemed very competitive versus what I remember because when I went to Japan, I was much older than, you know, like my arcade days.
Sure.
But things like Dance Dance Revolution were so popular. And it just seemed like more of a social competitive vibe to it versus I'm just going to go blow off some quarters and hang out with my buddies.
Mm. Interesting.
But, and you know, that could be my cultural context coloring it as well.
Possibly. And did you keep in touch with some people over there or?
I've still got a few friends on Facebook that, you know, either we just really connected while I was there to study or, you know, like we found each other after the fact, after we're all back. So I've got a few friends who are actually still there. Like, you know, they went back after they graduated or, you know, they wound up going back and just fell in love with it all over again and never came back to the US or Canada or wherever they're from.
Cool. Did you also read manga as well as watch anime, or particularly on the anime side of things?
I read manga. I actually have, what is the series title? It's X. And I brought like this whole series of manga back with me. I can't read it anymore because it's in Japanese. But like I was way more into it there because it was a lot easier to pick up a manga and just walk around with it.
Sure.
But I really enjoyed anime, but I'm so behind and out of touch with like what's popular now. It's shameful.
Yeah, no, I tried to, it's the same for me in video games. I occasionally like would look at, you know, the quarterly reviews on Kotaku about what's the best things you should be watching this summer. And then I just watch the reels and the trailers. And that's like as much as I can manage to get in.
Yeah.
Basically these days. Is there a main or one either feature or series in particular that you felt was a huge influence or very inspiring to you?
I would have to go with Dragon Age / Mass Effect. Because, you know, like I pre-ordered Dragon Age Inquisition. I took a week of vacation when the game came out.
Oh, well.
I'm a huge Dragon Age nerd. As anyone who read my off-world piece can tell.
I'll have questions about that later as well.
But you know, it was like kind of the first game that really sucked me into its world.
Can you give me an overview? And for anybody who doesn't know about Dragon Age, because well, I am actually somebody who doesn't know much about Dragon Age.
Okay. So the world of Dragon Age you are in the world of Thedas. It is a high fantasy game series. You know, with dragons and elves, and in the first game you play a Grey Warden, and Grey Wardens are like this elite force, for lack of a better way to describe them, that have their mysterious rituals and conscription and thing, and depending on the origin you pick, because the first game allowed you to be either a human, a dwarf, or an elf,
mm-hmm.
or a mage, and for some reason mage was treated as this whole separate origin, and you kind of do the heroine's journey or hero's journey. And, you know, you're in a situation where it's join the Grey Wardens and either die, go to jail, what have you. And so in the course of that, you wind up saving the world. You know, you meet companions, you can romance people, you can not romance anyone. There's intrigue, there's politics. And then it kind of continues in Dragon Age 2 with a different narrative.
Okay.
But they're linked because the character you're playing can be related to the character you played in Dragon Age 2. If you picked a human origin.
What would you say is an important kind of difference or improvement on like Skyrim, for example? Because is it similar in that kind of open world high fantasy thing?
Well, I would say Inquisition and Skyrim have the most in common.
Okay.
The first two games were pretty like, you know, linear. They're very, this is the path you take. The first game, there were narrative objectives and parts you could play. You didn't have to play them in a certain order, but you had to complete them all to really get the story and go defeat the end boss, which is a dragon. Two is very linear, but I think it's narratively a much tighter game because you play a character named Hawk who is running from the blight that is kind of what happens in the first game. And it's about family and loss and, you know, it takes place over 10 years game time, and, you know, it's very linear. That's one thing about it. It's like kind of like there's side missions, there's other things you can do, there's downloadable content, but it's pretty much you have to accomplish certain things to get to the end goal, which is fighting the head of the religious order of the city you're living in, which is Kirkwall, and it's very tight narratively. Inquisition is far more open. You can do things kind of in any order. You know, there's recommended levels for your missions and things you need to accomplish, but it's far more open world. Like I put in almost 200 hours in my first playthrough.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, there's fantasy creatures, and with Inquisition, there's a return to being able to play more than just humans, which mm-hmm. I think a lot of us loved. And it's pretty much you're the accidental hero in that game. You have one mission, depending on the origin you picked, and you wind up saving the world either, you know, with glee or very reluctantly, depending on how you're playing your character.
Okay, cool. Interesting. Back to your the studies that you did. So you did human-computer interaction, and then somehow you stayed in the same university, but you started working there? Is that what happened?
I actually started working there before I finished my degree. I came back from Japan, and I was actually working at an immigration law firm at the time I went abroad.
Okay.
And because it was a year, they couldn't hold my job for me, which was fair.
Yeah.
And there was like a position open. At first, it was a student position. And then a full-time position opened in the admissions office, and I wound up getting it and stayed there for 9 years.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's very interesting having the employee perspective along with the student perspective at the same time.
Yeah, that must have been kind of interesting at the time. It's funny. And meanwhile, you're still playing a lot of games on the side. As much, were you also playing tabletop games as much as video games, or less so?
During those years, I was getting a more tabletop, but... as you know, with a lot of tabletop, it's like you may start a game, have a great schedule.
Yeah.
Something happens, like one person either can't make it consistently. Maybe the GM has to take a break. You know, we kind of drifted apart. I actually did some, not D&D. It was another system. It was another role-playing system. I'm blanking on the name of it.
Pathfinder?
We played it online. No, I need to play Pathfinder. But it was we played it via Roll20.net because okay. We were all kind of scattered geographically.
Yeah.
But it was the same, you know, like D&D, fantasy, we had elves, things like that.
Okay.
But that was interesting because it was all through Skype and through
Google Hangouts. And Roll20, yeah. Yes, of course. Got it. And you mostly played Dungeons & Dragons. Did you try any other types of tabletop role-playing games or what's called like, what they call the indie tabletop games?
Yeah, because I've got some friends who design. During my study abroad year, we played Big Eyes, Small Mouth a lot,
okay.
Which was anime-based.
Yes.
Like Anything Goes anime game. That.
I actually have never played that game. I remember it now or read about it ages ago.
It was interesting because like basically as long as they appeared in anime or a video game, they were fair to play.
Yeah.
So I played Sephiroth because I'm that nerd. let's see what else. There was one that was post-apocalyptic set in L.A. Oh, and it was called Underground.
Okay.
God, I haven't played that in like 20 years. I don't know if it's still around.
I actually don't know.
Yeah, that was definitely a near the end of high school years, so at least 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, then some card games, you know, I played Cards Against Humanity. I played Settlers of Catan, all the usual kind of suspects.
Yeah.
In terms of tabletop.
Cool. And Cards Against Humanity comes straight out of Chicago as well, doesn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. So, and then of course you created the I Need Diverse Games that started out, what do you call it? A movement? A cause? A company?
Well, a community that is in the process. Yeah, that's in the process of becoming a non-profit.
Cool.
So yeah, it started off as a hashtag because I was angry about video games at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine, Mickey Kendall, Carnethia, who has, you know, 40,000 Twitter followers, retweeted me. And when someone with that many Twitter followers retweets you, it usually gets a lot of attention.
Mm.
And by the time I left for work and got there, it was trending.
And you really had no idea of this, like it was going to go and become what it is now, right?
Oh, no. I just added it to some tweets because I was angry about video games. And, it, you know, it must have, like, just struck a nerve at the right time with the right people.
Hmm.
You know, it trended for a couple days on Twitter. I gave it its own Twitter account because I didn't want to take over my Twitter. And then created a blog, which got some attention and wound up, like, on the Tumblr spotlight somehow.
Oh, wow.
And... you know, it just kind of went from there. You know, we have t-shirts. We're and people wear them to conventions, which gives me such a thrill.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely while it resonated and you had a lot of people that were representing and started saying, well, but the main thing is, and what I understood from what I read and what I read on your website and on the website of I Need Diverse Games. It's not more diverse, it's diverse. More diverse too. But that basically there's not much representation besides the, you know, typical white guy. essentially, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not much representation. And, you know, initially people want, well, you know, this is awesome, this is great. But, you know, there's some types of diversity that, you know, we're not real good about covering. Because, you know, it can't just be about more women or more people of color. It has to be other kinds of diversity, like, you know, neurodivergent, disabilities, even religious diversity. Because, I mean, I don't know how many, if you've ever played like Bioshock Infinite or other games where religion is often a tool of the enemy.
Right. Yeah.
Representing
so Spanish Inquisition type representation of religion.
Right. Or, you know, where the motivation of the character is that they're the religious zealot or, you know, they have their own ideas about religion. And, you know, we don't get to see characters often that are not the scruffy white dude protag that are fully realized or fully shaped. They're people. They're not tropes. They're not, you know, stereotypes, hitman, not hitman. I'm so sorry. Human revolution, Deus Ex Human Revolution has one of the most egregious things I've ever seen where a woman, it's a black character and she sounds like she stepped out of an Amos and Andy sketch.
Okay.
And, you know, I bought the game. I didn't get that far because I found the game mechanic very difficult. But a friend of mine who does a series called Gaming Looks Good talked about her. And so I went through and watched this and it was just like my blood started to boil because how could anyone think that kind of a stereotype is okay to put in a game in this day and age? So, you know, when things like that still get through games, when you have people who think it's funny, haha, to have a stereotype and go, oh, it's just a game, it's not that serious. When for you, you get all the representation, not literally you, but general you.
Yeah.
It's difficult because when you don't have to think about seeing yourself reflected in media, when other people ask for that same representation consideration, it's like you told them to go jump off a bridge or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. It's I don't know. It's a funny one because I was thinking about that a little bit as I was preparing for the interview and like reading some of your material and your articles. And also the same reason that I want to have, you know, well, more diverse people in my podcast. So just noticed by starting to make lists of who I could think off the top of my mind of game designers and even people in advertising and marketing and strategy, the vast majority of people that came out was like, well, a lot of white dudes, basically, or a lot of guys, at least, not necessarily like talking about color, because I know a lot of people from all around the world. So that's a bit more diverse from that perspective. But it takes a little bit more effort to go contact and find more women. And it's easy. I guess it is kind of like, I don't trust myself and my opinion necessarily because I know I'm of the majority because I'm a white guy, basically. So it just takes a little bit of, you know, stopping for a second and thinking about, okay, well, wait a second. Let's go and look beyond what the obvious is going to be, because otherwise I'm going to miss out on a lot of interesting people, essentially, I think, somehow. So you started that thing, it started resonating, and it's just over a year old now, and now it's your full-time activity, I understand, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, I came back from a convention and was dismissed from my job, so now this is my full-time job, and it, you know, I was basically doing two jobs while doing this work and my day job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can give it my full attention, and it's working out. You know, I'm able to sit down and fully give it all the attention it deserves and needs.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm trying to start up a nonprofit and basically just work for myself.
Yeah. Cool. Congrats. So it involves, so you have essentially, there's the hashtag and there's a Tumblr account, which I understand essentially the focus is, well, looking and showing and talking about all the different diverse characters that exist in games and video games in particular, or games of all kinds, a bit of both.
Games of all kinds. I don't want to limit it to video games. You know, like this month I've asked for, you know, black video game characters, and it's kind of shameful that we're getting the same characters over and over and over. The post where I asked for black video game characters is like 2,300 notes, like reblogs where people have added in characters, or people have sent in, with Tumblr, you can send in submissions or you can ask a question.
Yeah.
And I keep getting the same, like, 10, 12 characters. And I'm like, there has to be more. And the fact that people can't think of other characters is a big red flag.
Yeah, yeah. I came across recently, through the recommendation of a friend, a game that just successfully was crowdfunded on Kickstarter called Dushana. From a guy who's making games based in Scotland. And the main protagonist of the game is a Middle Eastern woman.
Cool.
Yeah. And it looks like a really, really interesting game. So it's a Middle Eastern woman set in a fictional Middle Eastern country that is under occupation. And it seems like it's a kind of top down adventure game with a mix of, like, the houses are built out of, like, handmade clay and then put inside of it. Like, it looks, there's a quite cool visual style. So I mentioned, number one, it looks really interesting. The main protagonist looked quite different. And it seems like those kind of indie games that are, you know, existing thanks to the crowdfunding seems to be bringing a little bit more diversity. I don't know if that was your experience or if that is your experience with crowdfunding or indie games.
I've seen a lot more of it. Another game that will be released in April is Orion, Legend of the Koryodon, by a company out of Cameroon.
Okay.
And yes, it's amazing. I had a chance to play it. You know, they've been amazing, to collaborate with and talk up the game. The studio head has been on a couple podcasts, friends of mine.
Cool.
And, you know, it's all about the mythology and, you know, it's a fighting game, but it's also pretty much about, this is our story. We have control of this narrative. And I'm very happy and excited for it to come out in April.
Is that, did you say fighting game or like hack and slash or fighting like Street Fighter type thing?
A bit of both. So there's RPG elements, there's fighting elements, kind of like the story goes on and you have combat. And I'll definitely stream it once it's out because I did back the Kickstarter.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really excited to get the game in April.
Okay, cool. So that's called Orion?
Orion. And
Orion,
that's fine. I will happily give you a link.
Once yeah, sure. Done cool. I'll so that I can add all the links on the show notes, et cetera, right? Cool. And in tabletop RPGs, that's another thing. Like I mentioned, I participated in this podcast in French and we're preparing an episode. We did a bit of a survey with people in France about the place of women in tabletop role-playing games. And diversity is going to be another question we're going to tackle after that one, but even more so. And going to conventions, I've attended a couple of conventions last year in London and in France. And it's also another area where you don't, or at least I didn't see, like, it's vastly white, male-dominated, right? And I'm wondering, maybe it's the same question for video game, I don't know. But what do you think, or do you think there's anything in particular that could be done for, you know, spreading the hobby out to wider and more diverse types of people?
For tabletop, I think it's just having more welcoming environments for shops and places to go play in person. Because one of the reasons I don't do a lot of tabletop now is because I've yet to find a store where I feel comfortable walking in and just playing or trying to find a pickup game or even just, you know, buying dice or figures. I may go into a place with my partner and they will immediately go talk to him. He doesn't even really game anymore.
Right.
He's just like, you know, maybe he's looking for figures, like, you know, not action figures, but, you know, like more movie related things, and he's not there for dice or books or whatever. So I think being more welcoming and having a serious kind of, this is what we need to do better talk among the community. Because it seems like the folks I know in tabletop, the conversations that are going on are harder because you have to deal with someone sitting across from you if you do a terrible racist thing or say a racist thing, or if your book materials are full of stereotypes and tropes and someone has invested their time and money in what you're marketing and what you've made. Because if I buy a rule book and it's got, you know, like a black character, but it's, you know, this terrible stereotype, or, you know, they're the noble savage or whatever trope you want to apply to it, I'm going to feel angry. I'm going to feel betrayed. I'm going to want my money back. And that shows that, you know, clearly there was not a person of color on your team when you put together this book because no one thought this might be offensive.
Right.
And I get a lot of the, well, it's not real. It's fantasy. It's tabletop. It's up to everyone's imagination. But it's like, but you put out the book with this image and this stereotype or this class or what have you, that isn't a good representation, which is, you know, I love Paizo. I love what they do. And I'm very glad that they, along with a few other companies, are making a concerted effort to do better and to have better representation of the materials they give you, so then the players can go out and do better, you know, in creating a campaign for people.
Yeah.
Because you could also, I mean, because you could also have great books, you have great resources, but if someone's a bad GM or, you know, they're just clueless, you know, maybe they're not intentionally racist. I try to operate under the assumption people are not intentionally horrible and racist, but it's ingrained. There's a lot of unintentional bias that we bring with us. I mean, yeah. It's there.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, I have some close friends who recently moved to Chicago, and they told me that about Chicago, and I know it's a trend that's growing, and it's appeared in London and a few other places, which is tabletop board game kind of bars and cafes that usually and often associated also with like microbreweries, craft beer, but not necessarily. And apparently there's a couple of good ones in Chicago. I don't know if you ever go to things like that, or, and if you find it's like a good environment and open to more people or open to try both gaming and, and mix in different types of communities and different types of people together.
The one in Chicago is Geek Bar Beta. I've been there for a few events. I've been there a couple times, like friends that either have like book signings or kind of, I'm part of the Chicago Nerd Social Club, and they've had events at Geek Bar. So I find it interesting, because I feel like that's a good place where if you're either into gaming and don't have the space, or if you want to try to do something different and introduce friends, maybe do a social activity they may not be interested in. Because I know if some people, like, if they're not really into gaming, it may be hard to talk them into it because, you know, partially because gaming has such a bad reputation right now. But I think it's good, and I want there to be more spaces like that. Yeah. I want there to be also spaces that are accessible to more people, because Geek Bar, while it's a great place, it is smaller, and it's in like a kind of super trendy, you know, hipster area of the city.
Right.
And, you know, luckily for me, I can get there pretty easy, but let's say some kid on the south side or someone who may go, oh, this sounds awesome, I want to go and check it out. It's like an hour and a half trek across the city on public transit, or, you know, it's hard to get to. So I wish there were more locations like that.
Yeah. It's interesting what you just said, because did you just say games have a bad reputation right now?
Games and certain elements of gaming have a bad reputation, you know, for the way people behave, the harassment that's gone on over the last year and a half. So I think right now saying that you're a gamer to people can get some very interesting reactions.
Yeah. Because it's interesting, because it has been like that kind of harassment online and a lot of bullying and which I've heard about, and at the same time there's this geek kind of culture has never been like, it's like super accepted and it's going more and more mainstream. I feel and there's more opportunities for smaller developers to be developing more and widely different kind of games. That are finding an audience thanks to Kickstarter and thanks to other initiatives. And I think, you know, these kinds of podcasts also allow different geeks and different gamers to communicate and keep in touch with each other and find new projects. So it's interesting. It feels like there's kind of these both extremes that are growing at the same time. I don't know if that's something that you feel as well.
Well, I think they're kind of floating around each other, like they're tangential to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the pushback against the unsavory element of gaming, because I just don't like naming them when possible, because it's like saying Candyman three times, they come out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and it's not worth it most of the time. It's like, it's not worth it. Yeah, no, but I get it. Yeah.
I think there's this pushback because, you know, like, I identify as a gamer. It's something that's been, you know, part of who I am, but it's not the be all end all of my identity.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, the ones that are like, you know, this is being taken from me, it's gone too mainstream, it's that security or that niche of this is my thing, they feel like it's being taken from them. Because like women and people of color and LGBT folks have always been part of gaming. Yep. It's not like we just suddenly sprung up whole cloth because of whatever game or whatever's going on. And I think a lot of what we see for geek culture is branded for consumption. It's not so much, you know, I think it's taking convention culture, nerd culture, and profiting from it. I despise Big Bang Theory. Yeah, I think it's a huge step backwards in terms of displaying geek culture because it plays in every stereotype.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not funny. This my main beef against it is I don't find it funny whatsoever.
Well, it's not funny because it relies on flat stereotypes. And you know, if I knew any of these people in real life, I would hate all of them.
Yeah.
But you know, that portrayal as being, you know, the epitome of geek culture isn't helping either. You know, I'm really tired of the awkward socially awkward, doesn't know how to talk to women, you know, would spend hours in the dark with a video game kind of portrayal, because that's not the case for majority of people who play games or into geek culture.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because it takes you to, I saw that you participate with, well, you're at a lot of conventions. You were at IndieCade last year, GamerX, you talked about GDC, and you are a diversity liaison at GamerX. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, and I'm imagining a lot more of the work as you shift into this, becoming a nonprofit, a lot of the work that you're going to be doing is like that. So what does being a diversity liaison involve? Particularly for a convention that seems to be already all about like a specific kind of, a minority, LGBT in particular.
So a lot of conventions suffer from having majority straight white dudes on panels and involved and in charge.
Yeah.
So there was feedback last, or I should say in 2014, to GX about, you know, this is great, but there's not a lot of people of color. There's not a lot of diversity in who's on your panels.
Yes.
And so the founders of it noticed my work and we were talking anyway. And they're like, hey, would you like mind working with us so we can do better? Because they were already doing good. You know, it is an LGBT-focused convention. But they took that feedback to heart because that's one thing that I found that I like is that, you know, they sit at the very end of the convention with people and go, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What can we do better on? We did the same thing last year at the end of GX3. And it's kind of going through the panels, making sure that it's not a bunch of, in this case, you know, for GamerX, gay white dudes.
Right.
Just talking about things, especially when it comes to panels about diversity and not having that one kind of spate of diverse panels where that's where all the brown folks are.
Yes.
And going with it.
Yes.
So we tried to, you know, spread out people and have people on things like talking about Twitch streaming and podcasting and things like that and not having it be, you know, just
about their color of skin or.
Right. Yeah. So it's just, you know, everyone has an expertise, whether or not they believe they do.
Yeah.
There's something that they're passionate and knowledge about. And, you know, if you're coming to this convention, you've already spent the time and money to show up. And if you know about something like, be it cosplay or, you know, writing about games, if you want to start your own RPG, especially it's empowering to see someone who looks like you sitting behind the table at a convention.
Yeah.
Versus going to yet another panel with yet another bunch of white dudes and going, well, you know, and I think it harbors this or creates a false sense of I need to know somebody to be a panelist or to talk about things or I need to be this expert. You don't. A lot of conventions are fan run and without other fans sharing their knowledge and their enthusiasm and what they do and what they know about, a lot of conventions couldn't run and they wouldn't be the same experience. And we shouldn't have that one diversity panel. And that's it. That's the one time you hear from people of color.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think there might be opportunities to do the same kind of work directly with publishers and game studios to just have them, you know, do better in terms of creating more diverse characters for video games?
Oh, definitely. A friend of mine, Sean Alexander Allen, actually started a consulting business for this already. And so a lot of times when people contact me, I try to push them toward him because he's like set up the business. He's done a lot. And you're like, there's enough to do where it's not just like, oh, well, you have this thing going on. We're going to come right to you. He's like, you know, made games. He's in the industry. I'm kind of tangential to it. So when it's possible and appropriate, I try to push business his way. But I think there's definitely room for this for conventions, also for games, because as people become more aware,
yeah,
it's going to be a lot more work.
Yes.
And it's never a simple conversation. A lot of people seem to think, oh, well, we'll have this email exchange and then I'll go off and do better. You can't. You can't just go, oh, we had this great Skype convo. Now I understand everything and I'm going to like make my game as inclusive as possible. You can't.
And would you have any, what do you think would be the first port of call or the first point of advice that you would give to somebody who's trying to like, you know, suddenly realizes and like, well, I don't know how, where do I start to add more diversity in my game? Like, should they talk to the person you just mentioned, talk to you or something else entirely? I don't know.
Well, talk to both of us, but also I kind of have a plan, you know, when you talk about diversity, what is it you're talking about?
Yes.
So I think people use the word diversity as a catch-all and they go, well, I need to be more diverse, but they don't know what it means.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you're making a tabletop RPG, is your setting not medieval Europe? Is your setting not, you know, the usual standard fantasy setting? Are you trying to give people as many protagonist options as possible? If you are making a character that is outside of your knowledge or writing the other, as you know, to take some sci-fi terminology, are you doing your research? Are you doing the work and making sure that, you know, they kind of don't follow the trope? Are you talking to people in that group? So if you are not a queer person, you're creating a queer character, are you checking in with someone if you don't have someone on your team already?
Yeah.
Because obviously smaller teams can't go hire and pay someone or bring people on and create this new team. But I think it would be good to have a diversity advocate or someone charged with going through things from step one and making sure that it's not, you know, it's as accurate as possible, as well as researched as possible. And then also kind of, you know, giving 2-3 sets of eyes on something, because my experiences as a queer woman of color are not going to give the same results as like a straight black dude looking at the same exact character.
Yeah.
But also be aware that people's time is important. And if you're asking a lot, be ready to either compensate them in some way or just bring them on your team.
Yeah.
If time and resources work out, just bring them on your team and go, this is a big project. I need your expertise. Here's what I can pay you. Here's what I can do for you. Because, you know, I've ranted many times about exposure. Exposure means nothing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people think, oh, my game is going to be the game that changes the industry and everything else. No, it's not. Yes. It's probably not going to be that game.
Yes.
So.
Excellent. And how do you how do you usually define diversity then? Or how do you talk about it? I mean, I'm not sure there's one way, but.
Well, what I try to do and I defined it in my GamerX talk, as reflecting the world around us, because nothing is homogenous. Nothing is, you know, all one way, all one way of existing. If you grew up in, let's say, a small white suburb, realize that that is not the be all end all of how the world actually is.
Yeah.
So there's different, you know, aspects of people that intersect and create who they are. They create the whole person.
Yeah.
So diversity for some people may be, you know, my experience as a queer person of color is what I am seeking in this particular gaming experience, or I'd like to be able to reflect it. Like with Mass Effect 3, another BioWare title that I love, you can romance a male shepherd, or you can romance a male character as a male shepherd until the third game. And so, you know, here's this great game that a lot of people love and are deeply emotionally invested in, but they can accurately portray themselves because Mass Effect and Dragon Age are games where you create a version of yourself to go save the world or the universe.
Yeah.
And so if I as a queer gamer lose that part of myself in playing this game, it could, you know, it's saying that, you know, I all of me doesn't get to save the universe.
Yes. Got it. Very interesting. Thank you. To change topics a little bit, you also have your own podcast, Fresh Out of Tokens. Yes. And you participate in a bunch of other podcasts. I'm still pretty recent to this, the podcasting thing myself. How do you usually go around like finding the topics that you want to talk about for your podcast? Let's stop there. One question at a time.
I literally tweet people and go, "Hey, I'd like you to be on my show."
Yes. That's a good way to start.
A lot of the guests I've gotten, including some BioWare devs, I just simply asked on Twitter or said, "Hey, you wrote this cool thing or you do this awesome thing in gaming. I'd love to have you on the show." And some of it is, other people I know doing diversity work in the game space, they had me on their podcast. So it was a chance to kind of return the favor and highlight what they're doing because no one person is the voice of diversity in gaming. And, now that we're caught up and through our backlog of previous episodes, we're trying to be a little more timely, kind of like what's going on, and record with someone as something is occurring. But it really is just like, this person wrote this really interesting article. I like what they have to say. Let's get them on the podcast. This week's episode that will be out, we got Jim Sterling.
I actually don't know who that is. I'm sorry.
He is a video game pundit. He does his own web series. And he's been around quite a while.
Okay.
But he came to GamerX and we had a chance to chat. And then I asked him if he'd be on the show and he said yes. Yeah. I got David Gator, formerly of BioWare, now of Beamdog. There was an article about a character he wrote that, was very pivotal because it was like the first, this character's gay. They're gay and that's it. Character that he wrote for the current Dragon Age game, and I was like, "Oh, I'd love to talk to you about this on the show." And he replied and had him on the show and talked for almost 3 hours.
Brilliant, excellent, cool. Thank you. And I usually finish with what I'm calling the cooldown questions, and it's the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. So it's traditional to ask if you have a favorite ice cream flavor.
Chocolate.
Any particular kind or brand or.
I really, really love, Cold Stone Creamery. It's like kind of a niche handmade ice cream place here in the States. I'm not sure if they have them.
I had one just down my street when I lived in Singapore, actually.
Okay. So yeah. I love Cold Stone Creamery. I love their chocolate. Or I usually get the sweet cream and add chocolate on like a separate, adding in of chocolate and chocolate chips. Or Breyers ice cream because it's one of my favorites.
Cool. Excellent. And I mentioned very quickly, but we didn't talk about that, but I work in marketing and advertising as a strategist. So sometimes I try to cross-reference things. And I think diversity in terms of advertising is also an interesting topic. And I don't know much about it specifically, but I know, for example, that in the U.S., there are advertising agencies that specialize in doing campaigns only for like Hispanic groups or only for Black groups and targeted at specific, TV channels or exactly. I don't know how the media plan goes exactly from that perspective, but what do you think of the state of diversity in terms of advertising and commercial messages?
I think it's getting a lot better. There was the Cheerios commercial that showed the mixed family. Mm-mm-mm. And it was just absolutely so cute and adorable. And, it wasn't like played up like, "Look, aren't we awesome?" It's just, here's this family.
Yeah.
Enjoying themselves. Some of the Target ads with, the gay couple. And I think it's becoming more, people are finally realizing that Americana is not two kids, a picket fence, a man and a woman, nuclear family.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. I love that, some of the products that I buy finally realize that, A, we exist, it's not all white dudes. And B, that, this sounds terrible, but there's money to be had and money to be lost without realizing that your marketing needs to change with the times. It finally needs to catch up with 2016.
Yes, I agree. I was going to say something along those lines, I imagine just because you said it that you would notice. And if you notice, there's maybe more chance that you would purchase the product. I mean, of course, if it works for you, right?
Oh, yeah. Like one thing that really worked for me, the Mafia game series, you know, I played the first one. It was like, eh, okay, I like it. Never really got into it. The game that's coming out this year has a black dude protagonist. You know, and it's set in Louisiana or New Orleans. And, you know, it's got such a mixed cast, but the fact that this black dude gets to be the lead and the time period it's set in, I was like, I'm sold. I'm buying it. I don't know any of the history of the Mafia games. I don't care, but this game is getting my money.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there any game that you really like and that you would like to see have a, you know, either feature a different kind of main protagonist that would either be, I don't know, female or of color or of any other minority?
The Uncharted series. I did finally buy the remaster for PlayStation 4, the first three games, and I'm working my way through it. But, you know, Nathan Drake is kind of like the archetypical scruffy white dude protagonist.
Yeah.
And, you know, people go, oh my God, it's like he's a dude Lara Croft. And Lara Croft was there first. But there's no reason that he couldn't been a man of color or a woman of color. But also, you know, if they had made him a man of color, who knows if the game would have gotten three sequels.
Yeah.
Or if it would have been as popular. And actually, I was thinking about buying Uncharted 4, but the character, there's finally a black woman character who's South African, but she's not voiced by a black voice actress.
Okay.
And, you know, I adore the woman who is doing the voice work, but it's just kind of like in this day and age, how do you finally have a black character and not at least get a woman of color, if not a black voice actress? Because, you know, while I don't fault her, because it turns out she had no clue what the character looked like when she was doing I almost said demonstration, when she did her audition, but the people making the game knew what she was going to look like. So I just think it's more on the game developer side. If you know what a character is going to look like, you're in charge of that casting call. And it's just, it's hard because there's not a lot of work for black folks in games anyway.
Yeah.
And the company's response really is what put me over the top on it, because they were just like, "Yeah, so what?" It's like, okay, I am done with this game. You know, it may be amazing. It may be, you know, graphically and gameplay wise, you know, above and beyond, but no.
Yeah. Got it. And I saw that, well, your main objective is to put yourself out of business so that you don't need to have somebody representing the voice of diversity, right?
Yeah. I mean, this should not be something where someone has to come in and tell people, hey, brown folks exist, queer folks exist, maybe you should realize they exist and put them in your media and everything else. I mean, look at the controversy over the Oscars 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to just exist in a world that realizes I am here, I have money, I want to participate in the culture, and not have it be this, look at us, we have a brown person in our movie or book or whatever, and aren't we awesome? You know, and not have to go, okay, you have one brown person out of 50 books or 20 movies that you've made. This is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. And do you have an idea? Because we've talked about the fact that there is progress and there's things that are going in the right direction. Do you have an idea in terms of a timeline of, you know, are you hoping? I mean, I know it's vague and it might be ambitious, but what do you reckon? What do you think? How fast do you think things are going to go in a progressing in a good way?
Considering
the let me rephrase that one. What would be, because that might be too big, what would be an important milestone that tells you you're in the right direction?
I'd say in maybe 10 years from now, we don't have controversies about, you know, people being recognized for their work and not having every piece of media have a white default as the lead.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to not have to have a read diverse books challenge to make people realize that there are authors beside old white dudes. You know, where I can pick up a video game and remember me is not the one exception. It's just part of a great bevy of games that I get to play with and, you know, see myself reflected without having to spend hours in a character creator to make myself make this character look as close to me as possible that I get to exist in the game world. Tom Clancy's The Division actually is a really good step in this direction. Totally random generator gave me a black female character right off the bat.
Interesting. Cool. Yeah. And to finish off the community, like how can people participate and what's the best way in which they can participate? They submit to Tumblr or is there any other, what can they do?
If interested. So what they can do, and depending on what it is. So like if someone wants to talk about diversity consulting, something like that, the best way to reach us is probably email, which is whyineeddiversegames at Gmail. I know it's a terribly long name. I'm working on getting a new email address. But, you know, tweeting at us at ineeddivgms or following the Tumblr at ineeddivgms.info or I have a separate WordPress blog, which I try to keep more like newsy things like that. More industry / article focused, which is ineeddiversegames.net.
Okay.
And then, you know, I'm going to several conventions this year. We do have a Facebook page. We have a Google Plus page, although I'm not sure how many people actually use Google Plus anymore.
There's actually surprisingly some of the tabletop role players use Google Plus, but there's not that many of them.
Yeah, like when things cross-post to Google Plus, that's where I get, you know, some really good feedback. You know, and obviously if you have questions or don't follow that or you want to follow me and kind of start a conversation, my personal Twitter is CypherOfTyr, which is CypherOfTyr. And I do not have my DMs open because, well, people are terrible.
Yeah.
So if you would like to have kind of a DM conversation, we will have to be mutually following each other.
Got it. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. And well, I'll add all the different links to the show notes. And good luck with the rest of the work. And good luck with the GDC and all the other conventions you're going to be at.
All right. Well, thank you so, so much. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast, already the 16th episode, comes to an end. Thank you very much for listening to the end. I really, really appreciate that. If you've enjoyed it, and I imagine you must have to a certain extent, because otherwise you probably wouldn't be listening anymore, but if you're still listening to this and you enjoyed it, think about a friend who might enjoy it too. And that's another main thing I ask, like share it with a friend. Send them just a link to the file, email them a link to the file, put it on your favorite social network. If you think there's something cool in the website, in the podcast, then just, yeah, quite simply just say you like it and give me a shout. You can contact me via my website. There's a contact form on there on www.icecreamforeveryone.net. It's all the words spelled out. You can find me on Twitter, as I said at the beginning of the show, at Hippo Will. There's a Facebook page for the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast and all the different news. I also write and publish a weekly newsletter, Ice Cream Sunday. Guess what day that comes out? I'd love for more people to check it out. So you can read it either on Medium with a week's delay, but ideally get it in your email because I really write it as an email, like from me to you, reader. So, you know, I just love for people to be in touch and I'm always happy to speak to people. So get in touch if you've enjoyed it. Tell a friend if you've enjoyed it. And until next time, have fun. Bye.